Holger Miller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with. Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Dennis J. Johnson, the House of Representatives chaplain. Welcome to the upper body.
I told my friends in the House that I was being promoted to the major leagues. They didn't appreciate it. Let us pray. O God of an ever-expanding universe, multiplying galaxies and worlds unknown, dare we believe that you are present here in this room, brooding over our concerns and involved with our struggles. Life gets messy. Life at the Capitol gets messy. Legislation gets messy. And yet faith traditions testify that that is precisely where you are to be found, not aloof in the heavens, but in the struggle of men and women to know the right and to do the right. The psalmist pleads, "Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. And if there be any evil within me, lead me in the path everlasting." By your grace, your love, and mercy, we have the capacity to search our hearts, to examine ourselves in your presence. And thereby we come to know our true mind. In the struggle, character is shaped, wisdom comes, strength comes, the blessing comes. The path to an agreement is before us. Let us wrestle and struggle until it is found. So bless us today as the process continues. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Ress, Grobling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. Without objection, Conference Committee on Pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Berglund moves that the following members be excused for Conference Committee on House File 1988 at 12 noon on Senator Berglund, Laurie, Sharon, Rosen, and Pretner Solon. On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Messages from the House.
First message is on Senate File 764. Senator Moi, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 764, a bill for enacting the state government allowing state agencies to conduct meetings by telephone or by electronic means. Senate File 764 was herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House, the Senate File number 764, and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator, a brief description of the bill and what changes were made.
Mr. President, members, Senate File 764, you may recall, passed the Senate floor very early on in the legislative session. It had to do with expanding or giving the opportunity for electronic meetings to all of our agencies to be able to have electronic meetings. The one amendment that the House made to it is a one sentence to the bill that says, in addition, the entity must post the notice on its website at least 10 days before the meeting. So they're asking for a 10-day posting on its website about the meeting so that people will know that the meeting will take place and so that people can avail themselves to the electronic format that's available. That's the bill.
That was a change. Okay, discussion. Senator Moi renews her motion that the Senate concur on the amendments by the House and Senate File 764, that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Discussion that the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 764, a bill for enacting the state government, allowing state agencies to conduct meetings by telephone or by electronic means.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Be it 49 ayes and zero nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to.
The next message is on Senate File 1033. Senator Marty, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1033, a bill for enacting a housing modifying municipality rent control provisions. Senate File 1033 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I move the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1033 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Marty, a brief description of the bill.
The House put on an amendment. It's on page, the House Journal, May 8th, page 5041. The bill is simply one which local governments that have agreements with developers on low-income housing, it clarifies that they are allowed to have limitations on the rent for during the period of their public subsidy. The House simply put on an amendment saying that it must be governed by an agreement between the governmental unit and the developer and specify the term of the public assistance. So it's purely clarifying language to a clarifying bill. I urge your support.
Okay, Senator Marty renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1033 and that the bill be placed on repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give Senate File 1033 its third reading.
Senate File 1033, a bill for enacting relating to housing, modifying municipality rent control provisions, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Thank you. Carlson? All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. Be it 46 ayes, 5 nays, the bill is passed, the state will agree to. There's going to be one more vote here, so instead of running out, stay seated and let's get this one done. Excuse me, the vote was 47 ayes and 5 nays. The bill is passed, the state will agree to.
The next message is on Senate File 99, Senator Carlson. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 99, a bill for an act relating to traffic regulations. Senate File 99 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur with the amendments made by the House on Senate File 1876, on Senate File 99, also known as the Child Restraint Bill, and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Carlson, a brief description of the bill and what changes were made since the bill left here.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, this is the Child Safety Restraint Bill. There were some amendments that were made to it. One amendment asked that the police be asked to pass out a piece of a flyer that looks like this, that supplies information to people who have been stopped without having a child restraint wrapped around their child. I have samples of it here to pass out if anybody is interested in it. The amendment was made to that amendment that asked that the police may pass out something like this. So the only amendment that changes it is that the police may pass out a flyer like this.
Okay, Mr.
President, that's the only changes.
Okay. Any discussion, further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Carlson renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House, Senate File 99, that the bill be placed on repassage as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 99, a bill for an act relating to traffic regulations requiring restraint of child under age 8 and shorter than 4 feet 9 inches while passenger in motor vehicle and modifying seatbelt requirements accordingly.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, will Senator Carlson
Evo Yale, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, Senator Carlson, is that pamphlet, is that a mandate that the police or law official distribute that to the individual, or is it permissive?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. President, Senator Frederickson, it is permissive. It is may pass out. And the pamphlets, these pamphlets have been produced and printed by the AAA. So it is something that will be supplied to the police.
Secretary will take the roll on the final passage of Senate File 99. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Being 39 ayes and 13 nays, the bill is passed and the state agreed to.
Next message is on Senate File 1477. Senator Fredrickson, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments and concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1477, a bill for an act relating to construction codes, providing a limited exemption. Senate File 1477 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 1477, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Okay, Mickey.
And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File 1849, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Next order of business, first reading of House bills to be referred to the committee as indicated. Oh, and there's a change that Senate File 15. And be referred to the committee on Rules and Administration. Reports of committee. Senator Pogorelli.
Mr. President, I move that committee reports printed in the agenda be now adopted.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Motion prevails. Now, the next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business, second reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. The next order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There's one printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a couple of resolutions printed on today's agenda. Without objection, they'll be sent to the Rules Committee. And we have, we're continuing on motions. There's a motion to be read at the desk.
Senator Torres Ray moves that Senate File 1797, number 114 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Torres Ray, this is your bill. And
yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate File 1797, which is number 114 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, on motions, remaining on motions, I'd move that the Senate do now resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole for purposes of taking up the general. Whoops. I think I have to waive the lie-over first.
That is correct.
I move that we waive the lie-overs on House file, on Senate File 82 on general orders.
Yeah, on the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, then remaining on motions, I move the Senate to now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
Okay, on the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate two general orders for today at this time. And then we will break for lunch, except for the conference committees. So, members, I just want to repeat that. After we process number 117 and number 48, we would break for lunch. We would break for lunch after we process these two bills, members. So I would designate those two and then yield to Senator Latz.
And then we'll break for lunch. Senator Latz, number 117 on general orders, Senate File 82, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, now I stand between the body and lunch. That's not a good place to be. Mr. Chairman, I move that when this body do arise, that Senate File 82 be recommended to pass.
Okay, Senator Latz, discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill is the Minnesota False Claims Act. It's a bill that already exists in the federal government and 21 other states. The federal law has been in place since the Civil War. Its purpose is to facilitate the recovery of taxpayer dollars that are fraudulently obtained by those contracting with government who submit false bills, falsely inflated bills, to the state. The materials you have on your desk show you how successful a False Claims Act is, both as part of the federal government and when it's a part of state law. Millions and millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars have been recovered by states acting pursuant to their False Claims Acts. And the way that they find out about the fraud going on is because of the financial incentive that is set up in the bill to encourage whistleblowers to come forward. The financial incentive is that the whistleblower, who is making a career-ending decision by blowing the whistle on their employer, will get a portion of the financial recovery that is made possible by their blowing the whistle. Specifically, the law provides, or the bill provides, that an actor, a person, in most cases a corporation, that knowingly submits false bills to the state is liable to the state not only for their damages, but also for up to three times those damages. It is a significant deterrence to those who would consider doing this. Not only would they have to pay what they inappropriately gained, but they would also have to pay more. So there is a clear civil penalty in connection with their knowingly defrauding the state of taxpayer dollars. I wish to tell you what is not in the bill. What is not in the bill is liability for inadvertence, mistake, even negligence. A simple clerical error, a simple billing error, a misstroke of the key when coding a billing will not create liability under the False Claims Act. But if the entity is doing so knowingly, that creates liability, because essentially they are stealing taxpayer dollars. The bill provides for the Minnesota Attorney General's office to have the opportunity to act on behalf of the people of Minnesota. A whistleblower could go directly to the Attorney General's office, and that office could file a claim, a lawsuit, with the district court and seek recovery. Alternatively, a whistleblower could go to a private attorney who could file that claim as a private attorney general on behalf of the people of Minnesota, and that attorney will be required to notify the Attorney General's office so the Minnesota Attorney General's office can determine whether to investigate, and if they choose to do so, at their discretion, could intervene and take over the case on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The whistleblower's financial incentive will enable them to make the very difficult decision of essentially saying goodbye to their career, to their job, by turning in their employer. Examples abound. You don't have to be fired to know how tough it is to live in an environment where you've turned your boss in for defrauding the government. In fact, you probably would not be directly fired because that would violate the protections that are in the bill for the employees. But you will be blacklisted in the industry. You'll never find another job in the same industry. You will get no more promotions. You will get no more bonuses. You'll be marginalized. Your boss will not give you the extra benefits of being a good employee. They could make it so hard on you that you will want to quit your job. And that is why it's so important to provide a financial incentive for these folks to come forward. I'm going to give you an example of why this kind of fraud is not discovered on its own. Hundreds of thousands of billings get submitted to the state and to the federal government every year. Millions of them. Computer transactions. Medicaid billings. We don't have the investigative staff, nor, frankly, does the investigative staff that's part of the Department of Human Services or the Attorney General's office have the knowledge and expertise of every form of billing to be able to recognize when these billings that are falsely inflated are occurring. You all know about the Tom Petters case, the Ponzi scheme. Even a case that large was unknown to law enforcement or investigators until a top close associate of Mr. Petters went to the federal government and turned him in, disclosed the whole scheme. Well, the same thing operates here. Only an insider who's working for the company that is submitting these false claims to the state knows what's going on. And that is why they need that financial incentive to come forward. Otherwise, we will never find out as a state, and the taxpayer dollars will continue to be paid out when they are not entitled to be paid out. So that is the basis for the False Claims Act. As I said, it's been in effect with the federal government since President Lincoln proposed it to recover monies that were fraudulently obtained by contractors during the Civil War, and it has proved remarkably effective on a federal level. But the state level is necessary to give the state the opportunity to sit at these multi-state national settlement negotiations to bring their claims on behalf of state law, and even if no claim is ever brought, just by having the state law in effect, there is a federal bonus available on Medicaid fraud recoveries. Yes, the federal government has found that this law, when a state has a counterpart, is so effective in rooting out fraud that they will give an increase of 20% of the state's share of recovery as an incentive for the states to pass their own state false claims acts. So, members, I encourage you to support this bill for purposes of rooting out the fraud, protecting the taxpayers of Minnesota. Members, I do have an amendment that I would like to offer. It is the A44 amendment. It is one of a number of a series of changes that we have made to the bill as it's worked its way through the process, designed to protect against some of the potential improper uses of the False Claims Act, and it would provide that attorney's fees can be awarded against a person who brings the act solely, or in this case, after the amendment, substantially for the purpose of harassing the employer. The current language says solely. The amendment changes that to insubstantial part. And I'd ask you to consider the A44
Secretary
amendment.
Secretary will report the Latz A44 amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend Senate File 82 as follows, page 8, line 15. This is Amendment A44.
Discussion on the A44 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Members, I welcome your questions, and I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion on Senate File 82, Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A43 amendment.
Secretary will report the Betzold A43 amendment.
Senator Betzold moves to amend Senate File 82 as follows, page 3, line 26. This is Amendment A43.
Senator Betzold, discussion on your amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, one of the issues that has been discussed as this bill has gone through the process is something called the right to cure. There's some concern by hospitals, by employers, that if they find out that somebody within their organization has been actually doing things to overbill the government, they want the opportunity to take reasonable steps to repay the amount of damages. This bill does that. Now, obviously, if there's a problem with the knowledge that they are engaging in defrauding the government, the right to cure should not and will not apply under this amendment, because this amendment specifically says that except in cases where there's specific intent to defraud the state or political subdivision. If there is specific intent, there is no right to cure. However, absent that, if a person finds out, that is a corporation, the organization finds out that claims, fraudulent claims have been made, they can take reasonable steps to repay the actual damages within 45 days of being so informed. Mr. Chairman, I think this is quite reasonable. It protects the employers. This is something that I think that the parties have interested in, including, by the way, the governor's office. So, Mr. Chairman, I request a roll call vote on the A43 amendment.
Three ads for a roll call. There will be a roll call. We're discussing the Betzold A43 amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Secretary, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman and members, you know, Senator Betzold had handed me a different coded amendment a few minutes before session began and said that's what he was going to offer. But now he's offering a different amendment which has a different impact. I was prepared to reluctantly accept the other amendment, but I have to ask you to oppose this amendment. I'm going to explain to you why. This would gut the bill. This would gut the bill. A right to cure sounds reasonable on its face. But let me present you with a scenario. You walk into Best Buy. You load up your coat with a bunch of CDs. And you walk out the door. You get all the way to your car. You get away scot-free. They don't find you. You do it again the next day. You got 10 CDs in your coat. You get to your car. But this time security catches up to you before you drive out of the parking lot. They caught you red-handed. You've got 10 CDs from Best Buy. You didn't pay for them. Do you think you're allowed to simply turn around and say, you know what? Sorry you caught me. You can have your CDs back. Let me go. I'll see you later. Senator Ingebrigtsen, Sheriff, would you do that? No, the person gets charged with theft. They don't get a right to simply cure their theft by saying, you can have it back. But that's exactly what the A43 amendment does. It requires that a company not be found liable if the inside person who knows the fraud is going on tells the company in their compliance office, and the compliance office then gets a chance to go back and pay back the government. Even if they have been knowingly defrauding the government for years, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they get a get-out-of-jail-free card because someone inside their company convinced the compliance office to finally take a look at something, and they're going to write a check back to the government, you think the government is going to say, ah, fine, it's water under the bridge, we're not going to worry about it. But that's exactly what the A43 amendment does. And let me tell you one other thing. No insider, potential whistleblower, is going to go do this because they're not going to get their compensation for giving up their career. They're being asked to give up their career on the inside without getting any benefit from it. Do you think someone who turns in Eli Lilly, for example, for falsely billing hundreds of millions of dollars to the federal government is going to have a career left in Eli Lilly? Of course they're not. Every day on the job will be horrible for them. Members, a right to cure provision, as is written in A43, promotes frauding corporations to take a shot at all schemes, all sorts of schemes to steal from the government. And if they get caught, there's no harm, they can just pay it back. How can you seriously entertain an amendment that would do that? Members, I urge you to reject the A43 amendment because it would gut the bill, and not only would it gut the bill, frankly, the federal government is not going to find the bill in compliance with a provision like this, and we won't even be entitled to the bonus, the Medicaid bonus that we would get by having a law in place, because we have to comply with the basic tenets of the Federal False Claims Act in order to get that bonus. And this just undermines the entire tenet of the False Claims Act.
Senator Betzel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Senator Latz, I did give you a copy of what was an 841 amendment. As you were describing the bill, and just before they called upon me, counsel actually provided me the 843 amendment, which was almost identical to it. If you looked at the language, there was some other alternate language that I looked at this morning, and I thought it better captured the right to cure. If you look on the A43 amendment, it says at the page 1, line 6, it says unless, whereas the A41 amendment, which was not offered, says if, instead of saying the person takes response, reasonable steps, if the person fails to take. So it's very similar. So I'm not quite sure why you say that you are willing to accept one but not the other one. But frankly, members, first of all, I don't know what's happening on the federal level on this one because I'm told that the False Claims Act is actually in a conference committee in the United States Congress, and they're trying to work out differences. The law may be changing. So what the law has been, I don't know what it's going to be in the future. In fact, I'm not tracking that closely. That's what I've been informed. However, the example that Senator Latz gave is a false analogy. He's talking about people who shoplift and get caught and return the property. Well, that is a classic case of somebody who knowingly commits a crime and is being held accountable for it. And as I explained with this A43 amendment, if you are knowingly committing the crime, giving the money back is not an out for you. You are guilty. This is to take care of those inadvertent things where they have no prior knowledge. So the example you gave is not on point. It's completely off base. So, Mr. Chairman and members, the A43 amendment does take reasonable steps to protect the employers who have no knowledge of what's going on with them, and they find out, and they take those steps to cure. Thank you.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I rise in support of the A43 amendment. And I agree with Senator Betzold. Senator Latz uses a very phony argument. Obviously, the person that shoplifts has a specific intent. And on lines 1.5, it talks about specific intent, and those people are excluded. If you have specific intent, you do not have the right to cure. So this is pretty simple stuff here, members. It's not rocket science, and yet I've had to listen to people over and over on this issue try to tell me some phony arguments that have nothing to do with the language we put before it. And Senator Latz, unless you can tell me what the change between if and unless, how that affects this in a negative way, or the word takes or fails has a negative way, because that is exactly what the difference between these amendments are, and you said you were reluctantly going to accept the A41, explain to the members how significant these two word changes are.
I think that was a question to Senator Latz. Is that correct? Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, the difference between one word in statute can be quite significant, and the difference between the word if and the word unless makes all the difference the world in the A43 amendment. When the word was if, the get-out-of-jail-free card, if you will, only applied if the whistleblower went to the compliance office first. But if the word is, and I was prepared to accept that, but if the word is unless, then it crowds out all other options. Then it's mandatory that the whistleblower go to the compliance office first. Otherwise, there's no liability. So that is a very, very significant word change. Also, members, if the purpose of this is to make sure that there's no liability for inadvertence or mistake or negligence, then this is not necessary. This is not necessary because, for several reasons. First of all, subdivision 3 of section 1 of the bill, the definition for liability is knowing and knowingly. By definition, if it's mere inadvertence or mistake or even negligence, it is not knowingly. And Senator Jungbauer, this actually is not quite rocket science, but it's a little more complicated than it is simple, because these words have very specific legal meaning. Knowingly is a very, very high standard of proof for liability purposes in state law. It is not intent, specific intent to defraud. It's not me saying I'm going to go in and I plan to take that CD from Best Buy without paying it. But if I go in there and while I'm in there I take a CD and I know that I haven't paid for it and I still walked out knowing I should have paid for it, I should still be liable for that, even if I didn't in my mind specifically intend to take it. And that's the kind of standard that's present in the False Claims Act. So the basic standard of liability knowingly prohibits and precludes liability for inadvertence or mistake. But not only that. In another place in the bill, we specifically state, I'll turn you to line 3.28, an employer is not liable for an act committed by a non-managerial employee that violates the section unless the employer had knowledge of the act, ratified the act, or was reckless in the hiring or supervision of the employee. That's a basic agency definition. so that a low-level clerk that inadvertently enters a coding error could not create liability on the whole corporation unless the corporation knew about it, knowingly enabled that to happen. And there's another place in the bill, members, in which we also specifically exempt inadvertence or mistake or negligence. So we have a belt and a suspenders and a crane already in the bill to preclude liability for inadvertence or mistake. The A43 amendment is far more than that. It says nothing about prior knowledge. It says only that this is a way to get out of jail for free. The entire corporation can know that they are falsely billing the state. And if the whistleblower goes to the compliance office and the compliance office says, okay, we'll repay it, they're not liable under the False Claims Act. That's what A43 says. That's what A43 says. Doesn't say anything about exemptions relating to prior knowledge or anything like that. So this really is a significant amendment, members, and I submit to you that it will gut the bill if this is offered. And I will tell you, if the federal government changes the law, then we'll be back here to be in compliance with the federal government's False Claims Act. But for now, as we all know, the legislative process is a long one and a complicated one, and to say that something has gotten to a committee in Congress doesn't say what's going to become law in the end. I urge you to reject the A43 amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I hope members will support the A43 amendment. There's a specific section of that that I find very important for this whole context, and that is line 1.7. Where unless there's except in cases where a proof of specific intent to defraud is found, a person is not liable under this section unless the person has been informed by the original source that single or multiple false or fraudulent claims have been made against a state or a political subdivision. Without this section of this amendment, this bill will encourage disloyalty in the employees in corporations. Because if they find that there's been a multiple claim, they now would have, without this language, an incentive not to tell their supervisor and go to the state and get a payout. Go find an attorney. That attorney can also have attorney's fees. We want to make sure that employees in our corporations go to their managers and say, there's a problem here. We can fix this. We want to incentivize them to fix it. If they don't first have the responsibility to go to their managers or their corporate officers to explain what's happening, how can the corporate structure then respond? That key relationship between employees and managers needs to be supported in this legislation if we're going to pass it. We shouldn't undermine it or create incentives for people to go and turn in their corporation or their manager without first having given them notice that there's been an error. Members, I hope you'll support the A43 amendment. It's absolutely critical to this bill.
Still on the A43 amendment, Secretary will take the roll on the Senator Betzel A43 amendment. I'm sorry, Senator Olson.
There, I guess. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The comment I would like to make with regard to this amendment is that if we think about it, even not in terms of an analogy, but if we think about it in a practical sense, how these issues come up, and we think through what this amendment would do, in my opinion, this amendment goes too far in terms of moving the balance in the other direction. As Senator Lett said, there's already language in the bill that prevents people from being caught for inadvertent mistakes or even for negligence. But what this bill would do is, for example, if someone comes to a manager, the example that Senator Ortman used, and gives information to that person about false claims being made, and that manager does nothing to correct the problem because for whatever reason, unless the person has also reported the information to, I guess what's called in the bill, the compliance office, the manager is off the hook. And the manager doesn't have to tell someone that they have to go to the compliance office. This is something that someone has to somehow know. You also have to get the information from the original source. And I guess in terms of knowing you're doing something wrong, why would it matter who tells you you're doing something wrong? If you have reason to believe that it's accurate information, you should be accountable. You should have a requirement that you correct that mistake, and that money is refunded and that steps are taken to make sure that you don't continue to make false claims. And so I agree that we should have balance in a bill and something should never be too heavy-handed in one direction or another. But I think that Senator Betzold's amendment goes too far in the other direction to make it very, very difficult to hold anyone accountable. And the whole idea here is we want there to be an incentive for positive behavior so that we're not paying more money than we need to at the state or federal level for claims that are false and fraudulent. Thank you.
Senator Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think that the last speaker failed to address the second part of the amendment. It's a two-part process. Employee finds that there's been a multiple claim to the state made. The employee should then talk to the manager or supervisor. If the manager or supervisor fails to act, then there's liability. That's what we're saying. 45 days to correct. But they have to be clearly placed on notice, and that's what this amendment is about. It's only fair to the employers and the employees that they talk about this. You train your employees, you supervise your employees, and hopefully they come back and they report concerns to you. But there should be that obligation to report it before somebody becomes liable, and we incentivize employees to go file claims of recovery and to hire attorneys to go get attorney's fees for these kinds of causes of action.
Senator Olson, do you have a...
Just quickly in follow-up, Mr. Chair, I disagree with Senator Ortman because there's an and in the language. And so if someone wants to hold someone accountable, they will not be accountable unless they can prove that the person has first been informed, so the manager, if it were that example, has to know about this, and they have to show the failure to take reasonable steps and the person that it's been reported to a compliance officer. So the person trying to bring the claim is going to have to show all those things. If the manager knew about this, but there wasn't a report to the compliance officer, then the manager is off the hook and isn't going to be able to be held responsible under this language.
Okay, we're continuing on the A43 Betzold Amendment. Secretary will take the roll on the Betzold Amendment, A43. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes, 16 nays, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A77 amendment.
Secretary will report the Betzel A77 amendment.
Senator Betzel moves to amend Senate File 82 as follows, page 9, line 28. This is Amendment A77.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman and members, one of the things that has been vexing both the State Government Conference Committee has been trying to pay for this bill. Just yesterday in the Senate Finance Committee, we discussed this particular bill, and we determined that we were going to adhere to the fiscal note, which had about a $2 million a year cost, but there was no way to pay for it. What the Finance Committee voted to do yesterday was to put about $2 million into the bill as seed money and then to delay the effective date. Well, the trouble is the money that was paying for it is money that is in a bill that did pass the Senate floor, but it cuts the deputies and assistant commissioners in order to do that. This would provide the same money but move up the effective date and actually pay for the bill, pay for the program. And the way it would do so is because there are some unexpended balances right now within the Office of Attorney General that would pay for it. Actually, they've got about $6,634,000 within it. This would appropriate some of the unexpended balances, which would revert to the general fund anyway and help pay for it. So instead of having just the bottom line of the Senate budget pay for it, this actually takes real money and pays for the bill that Senator Latz has brought forward to you. I stand for any questions and urge your support on the A77 amendment.
Senator Latz.
Members, I encourage you to accept this amendment.
On the A77 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to offer the A76 amendment.
Secretary will report the A76 Moi amendment.
Senator Moi moves to amend Senate File 82 as follows, page 4, lines 7, 12, 15, and 18. This is Amendment A76.
Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, members, I understand that in the Finance Committee yesterday, a couple of compromising position were struck and some amendments were put on. One amendment is on page 4 of the bill under subdivision 2 of the investigatory powers. It is my understanding the intent here is to give to the Attorney General's office the investigatory powers that they already have under current law, under Minnesota Statute 8.31. But if you read the language here very carefully, on line 4.7, it says the prosecuting attorney. And within the bill, we define the prosecuting attorney to be more than just the Attorney General's office. We define the prosecuting attorneys to be the Attorney General's office or the prosecutor's office at the city level or the county attorney's office. And so I think that to keep in with the spirit of the bill and to not substantially change or broaden the power that we want to give, I think that we ought to restrict the investigatory power to the power that the Attorney General already currently have. So the A76 amendment, members, is to do that, is to clarify that this investigatory power is restricted or limited to the power granted to the Attorney General and not to all the prosecuting attorneys that are referenced in this bill. I hope to have your support.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, will Senator Moi yield?
She will yield. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Moi, I'm trying to reconcile the amendment that you're offering with the amendment that was added in the Finance Committee at the request of the Attorney General's office that that resulted in a reduction in the fiscal note by half, so that the Attorney General's office would deal with claims relating to the state, and political subdivision prosecuting attorneys would deal with claims relating to the political subdivisions. That way, claims against, you know, a county or a city would not become the responsibility of the Attorney General's office, and as a result, they were able to reduce the amount of work that they projected and cut the fiscal note down quite a bit. Could you help me understand how your amendment would fit in with that piece that's already a part of the bill?
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware that somehow we were eliminating state cost by broadening the prosecutorial authority of local government. I thought that the any kind of fiscal note that is incurred in this bill, which are state cost, is estimated based on the cost to the Attorney General's office. And so I am merely making sure that as they want to make sure in this provision that they continue to have this investigatory powers, I want to make sure that we're merely giving to them what is due them that's already in law. And in fact, I could have just do a cross-reference. And I might recommend, Senator Betzel, that you might want to think about doing that in the conference committee. But I think that it is overreaching to give this broad authority to the local governments.
Further discussion on the motion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Moore, this amendment, am I correct, your amendment would take out the authority of the local prosecutors and only have the Attorney General having the authority to pursue cases? Is that correct?
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, no. Senator Limmer, the local governments would be able to pursue these cases at their level if they recognize that. But this investigatory power says that in connection with an investigation under this section, the prosecuting attorney may obtain discovery from any person regarding any matter, fact, or circumstances. And I think that as a matter of policy and in current law, we've given this investigatory power to the Attorney General. I am not comfortable with giving this broad investigatory power brand new to the local government. This amendment does not in any way prohibit them from doing this. It merely says that this broad ability is given to the Attorney General's office as they currently already have in current law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Moab, in the event this amendment would be included in this bill, we had the earlier discussion about funding this bill. By giving this authority to the Attorney General's office, are we now creating a financial difficulty for the Attorney General's office by giving them this added jurisdiction?
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, no, because the Attorney General's office already has this authority under current statute. So to clarify things a little bit, Mr. President, and we can continue the discussion, I'd like to withdraw the A-76 amendment. I'd like to withdraw the A-76 amendment, Mr. Chair.
A-76 amendment has been withdrawn.
And Senator, now I'd like to offer the A-78 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-78, Senator Moore, as amendment.
Senator Moore moves to amend Senate File 82 as follows. Page 4, delete Subdivision 2 and insert. This is Amendment A-78.
Senator Moore, on your
amendment.
So
now, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Limmer, the bill in that particular section puts into place as new language investigatory powers. And what I would like to do is to make a cross-reference to what's already under current law allowable for the Attorney General to be able to exercise under 8.31 to make a cross-reference to that power of the Attorney General to be able to investigate these kind of situations. So
I will stand for any questions.
Okay, we're on the A78, Senator Moore's amendment. Discussion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File 82 as amended? Seeing none, Senator Latz renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 82 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. Senator, there's one more bill today on general orders. It's number 48 on general orders. Senate File 107, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee arrives, Senate File 107 be recommended to pass. Is my mic on?
Okay, we got a little...
Is that better?
Try it again.
Okay. Thank you,
Bob. Nope, it's not working. Try it. Take your neighbor's...
Is this better?
That's better, Senator Rest.
Thank you. Senate File 107 is a bill I worked on with the Legislative Auditor's Office. It has three sections. One, it allows the legislative auditor expands the scope of his investigations when he is doing financial audits by erasing the limitation for having it apply only to state employees. The second section modifies the law dealing with the misappropriation of money, making it a crime when someone intentionally steers money to a purpose for which it was not intended, and then the bill requires the Commissioner of Finance to develop some best practices provisions for investigation. The bill was not opposed and is, I don't believe, is controversial.
Okay, any further discussion on Senate File 107? Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 107 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee of the report of the report of the committee of the whole be as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Without objection, pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Pretner Solon moves that the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate File 550. At 12 o'clock on, Senator Pretner Solon, Senator Sparks, Senator Dahl, Senator Dibble, and Senator Senjum. And there's one message to be read at the desk.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 802 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 802, a bill for an act relating to public safety, appropriating money for public safety, corrections, and other criminal justice agencies. Senate File 802 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Mr. President, is there other work at the desk right now?
No, that completes the work at the desk.
Okay, Mr. President, members, we're going to recess till a little later this afternoon when we will take up House File 1298. That's the vehicle bill for the members' provisions of the tax bill that they've been working on down there. I think Senator Johnson knows what's in that. And I think we'll come back at 5 o'clock to do that. So, and then depending on progress on other conference committees, we may or may not meet this evening. I just don't know that answer right now. What I do know is that tomorrow we will have conference committee reports. Saturday we will be working for sure, and it's a significantly over 50-50 chance that we'll be meeting on Sunday. So for members' planning purposes, I think you need to plan for that. Now, someone will ask a question, have we ever met on a Sunday? The answer is yes. We have met three Sundays in a row over the last like 4, 6, and 8. So we have done that. Obviously, if all the work is done by Saturday, we won't meet Sunday. But if we don't get these conference committees closed tonight... So I move that the Senate recess until 5 o'clock.
Before that, Senator Anderson, do you have an announcement?
Thank you, Mr. President. The Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will be meeting at 2 o'clock in room 107 to do the game and fish bill.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Education Conference Committee will meet at 2 o'clock in room 112 of the Capitol.
Senator Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Freshman Caucus, the majority, will be meeting in G21 at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Senator Asenjo.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, I'm sure the tax bill is not terribly controversial, but could we get 15 minutes to look at it after we convene? Or convene at 4:45, if you want to start at 5. Okay.
Senator Moy.
Mr. President, usually these points of personal privileges are done at the end of the day, but I think that it'll go late this evening. So I've asked the majority leader to give me a moment now. And I ask the members, I want to thank you ahead of time for the opportunity.
Senator Moy.
Members, I rise to a point of personal privilege recognizing today, May 12, 2009, as Deep Vein Thrombosis Awareness Day. Deep vein thrombosis, or DVT, is a condition that occurs when a blood clot forms in one of the body's large veins, which may result in a fatal blockage of a pulmonary artery. This condition occurs in approximately 300,000 to 600,000 women, men, and children of all ages and races each year. Today, the legislature joins with a coalition to prevent DVT to promote awareness, encourage improved education, diagnosis, research, and treatment of this disease. It is important for our legislative body to recognize this condition because, according to a survey conducted by the American Public Health Association, 74% of Americans are unaware of DVT. DVT is a very serious but preventable medical condition. Nearly one-third of people who have DVT have post-thrombotic syndrome, a chronic disabling condition characterized by swelling, pain, discoloration, and scaling in the affected limb. Another one-third of people who have DVT end up having a blockage of a pulmonary artery, which is fatal. This blockage is the most common preventable cause of hospital death and the leading cause of maternal death associated with childbirth in the United States today. Risk factors for DVT includes cancer and certain heart or respiratory diseases. This disease affects most those whose jobs require them to be sedentary members for long periods of time. Airline pilots and travelers, farm equipment operators, long-haul truckers, and those with desk jobs. Members, please join me in learning more about this serious disease, and thank you for recognizing Deep Vein Thrombosis Awareness Day in Minnesota. Thank you very much.
That was an announcement. Senator Pogemiller, do you wish to make a motion to recess?
I renew my motion to recess till to recess till 5 o'clock.
Okay, on the motion to recess, all those in favor signify by saying aye. opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess till 5 o'clock.
Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, we have some conference committees working, so I would move that we recess till call the chair, which will be roughly 5:45.
All in favor of the Pogemiller motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senate is in recess till 5:45. Call the chair, excuse me.
In order, Senator Clark. You're right there, Rick.
Mr. President.
Senator Clark. Impose call of the Senate.
Yeah, Mr. President, I think instead of imposing a call, Senator Senjum knows we are going to actually continue our recess just a bit longer so that both caucuses can get a chance to talk about the upcoming bill, non-controversial bill about some of the tax provisions that have been being worked on. We think we need about 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay, is that motion to recess?
Mr. President, I believe since we're...
The motion is the recess to the call of the chair.
Exactly. DFLers will be caucusing back in the retiring room, if that's okay, Senator Senjum.
Okay, on the motion, Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Republicans in room 112... Okay. Sergeant, any help? How about 237, Sergeant? Would that work for us?
You want to use my room, Senator Senjum?
Mr. President, Republicans
here?
In room 237.
Okay.
Senator Clark, may I ask, this won't take very long, maybe?
Mr. President? Senator Senjum? Yes, 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, on the motion of Senator Clark's to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor? Signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess. Senator Clark.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Clark.
Mr. President, remaining on the order of business of motions and resolutions, I move the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
Okay. On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr.
Senator
President.
Clark.
Members, we are going to be taking up the general orders that's on the sheet that's been passed out. Starting with Senate File 87 down through 91, we are going to be waiting on House File 1298, the Omnibus Public Finance Bill. Once that comes in, we will move forward to that.
Okay, there are 9 bills, I believe there are 10 bills. They're on your desk, so follow down. We're starting with number 87 on general orders, which is Senate File 1284, Senator Laurie.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, you have your motion to make.
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1284 be recommended to pass.
Okay, on the motion, all in favor? No, excuse me.
Oh, there we go.
We tried to move it right along, but maybe you have to explain the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a gambling control board bill. We've been working on it. I think most of us understand that the charitable gambling entities around our state have been struggling over the recent years. Last year, we did give them some relief in terms of some additional percentages on their lawful expenses and asked that Tom Barrett, the executive director of the Gambling Control Board, spend the interim doing a work group and trying to figure out how we can help with administrative issues to streamline and do all we can to help the charitable industry survive through these difficult times. And so this is a rather lengthy bill with a lot of provisions that came from that study and some cleanup amendments. I would like to thank my co-authors for helping me with this, Senators Rust, Roebling, Gerlach, and Wieger. And I'll just step through the bill as quickly as I can, but it is rather lengthy, and I should tell you all I can about it. Section 1 is really the number one issue for the industry. It's a regarding the annual audits and the certified inventory and cash accounts, it increases the threshold for an annual audit from $300,000 to $500,000 and eliminates the financial review requirement for organizations with less than $300,000 in annual gambling gross receipts, but requires an annual certified inventory and cash account for all licensed organizations. This is, again, the number one issue for the industry in this bill, and it is slated to save them between $1.5 million and $2 million in accounting fees, really, over the next several years. Section 2 is regarding the purpose and deletes the word commercialization from the purpose statement. Then we get into definitions. Section 3 deletes a limit on advertising expense. Section 4 clarifies the definition of capital assets. Sections 5 and 6 are technical cross-reference to support some of the other provisions. Section 7 allows for programmable electronic devices that have no effect on the outcome of a game, visual or auditory enhancement of a game, and the board must approve these prior to use. Section 8 reduces the requirement from 2 years to 6 months for gambling managers, membership in the organization. Section 9 is a technical cleanup of language. Section 10 is mostly technical. There's a couple of new provisions in it. It's a lengthy section. One is that the citizens' monitoring of surface water quality by individuals or non-governmental organizations is a lawful purpose, and the data should be submitted to the PCA. The rest is mostly technical again. Well, there's 5% of net receipts can be used for repair, maintenance, or improvement of real property and capital assets for replacement of a capital asset that can no longer be repaired. Section 11 allows paddle wheels to be automated as an electronic selection device if it's approved by the board. Section 12, it allows for electronic auditory or visual enhancement of a pull tab dispensing device as long as it does not affect the outcome of a game again. Section 13 is technical. Section 14, this is really another quite important issue to the industry. The board is proposing here to eliminate the expense calculation requirement and replace it with a rating of profitability system. Essentially, organizations that fail to meet a 30% minimum for lawful purpose donations will be on probation for a year, giving them some time to increase their rating to 30% or be subject to a suspension or civil penalty after that 1 year's time to correct. The board will continue to review expenses, but a greater emphasis will be focused on where the money goes for charitable causes. Section 15 is technical. Section 16 is a study recommendation to support perpetual organization licenses. That is something that will be covered a little bit later, and it's to conform with that. It also increases the citation for violations to $1,000, up to $1,000. Section 17 and 18 and 19 are technical, mostly to conform with the perpetual organization. Section 20 is mostly technical, but it's really where the perpetual organization license with no renewals and membership language is modified so that there has to be 15 members active members at the time of initial application, and thereafter 13 members eligible to vote on gambling matters. Section 14 also establishes the perpetual organization license. It takes quite a bit of language to get that piece done. Section 22 is mostly technical. Actually, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, and 27 are all in support of the perpetual license piece. Section 28 is technical, correcting a cross-reference to the definition of allowable expense. Section 29 requires linked bingo game provider to provide the board with a proposed fee schedule. That's for the integrity of the game. Section 30 is organization's license if they fail to pay annual license and permit fees. And then we move into premises permit, which are also going to a perpetual license. So section 32 and 33. Oh, okay. Sections 32 and 33 are technical in support of the perpetual premises permits. Section 34 is technical language being moved elsewhere in statute to better support the readability. Section 35 is a compliance incentive kind of. Right now, exempt raffles mostly are supposed to submit to the board more than 30 days in advance of the event, but there's very little compliance with that. There's a $50 fee that gets sent in for those applications, and what we're saying is you can still submit after within the 30 days, but it would be $100 within that 30 days, but as long as you still comply with current law and send in your application more than 30 days, it would still be the $50. Section 36, gambling managers. The board is proposing to give an organization some latitude to obtain a new gambling manager within a short time frame and continue its gambling operations in the interim. Section 37 is technical language being moved. Sections 38 and 39 are technical. They're adding linked bingo game providers to the list of manufacturers and distributors. Section 40 is allowing progressive bingo prizes to be paid by check within three business days of the bingo occasion. This is to avoid having large amounts of money on hand for some bingo occasions. Section 41 is technical, moving language around to place it better. Section 42 is technical, and this one actually allows some greater flexibility in offering a variety of bingo games like good neighbor games, last person standing, and the like. Section 43 is technical. Section 44 is technical, just moving language. Section 45 is technical, supporting the perpetual premises permits. And the bar operation rent cap is removed in this section as well. Section 46, organizations and the general public frequently request clarification on who may participate in lawful gambling, and that's been scattered around the statutes historically, and this new section organizes and consolidates and clarifies exactly who may and may not participate in lawful gambling. It's really just a technical consolidation of those statutes. Section 47, 48, 49 are mostly technical. 49 does have one piece that allows lawful purpose expenditures to be paid electronically. This is just to kind of get into the 20th century here. Section 50 is a study recommendation. It deletes the requirement for a financial review. This goes back to the audits provision, the most important provision to the industry. Section 51 is technical. 52 through 57 are all very technical. 58 is a new provision allowing a person to purchase a raffle ticket with a debit card or a check, but still all other forms of lawful gambling require cash payments. Nothing would allow a credit card. Section 59 and 60 are technical, and Section 61 is mostly technical repealers to bring the outdated statutes that don't conform with all of these numerous changes out of the statute. That is the extent of the bill. Would appreciate members' support and stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1284? Seeing none, Senator Lori renews his motion that one. Oh, Senator Lori, do you have an amendment? Senator Lori renews his motion when this committee to arise. Senate File 1284 be recommended to pass. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, will Senator Lori yield?
He will yield. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lori, on Section 3 of the bill, you strike some provisions dealing with allowable expenses, including the conduct, including some advertising, the way it sounds. Is that picked up in another section of the bill, or how significant is that change?
Senator Lori.
Chair, Senator Frederickson, it is. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Important and a little bit significant. What it really does is allows organizations some flexibility in where the money goes and things. They can put out a highway that says that they support, you know, these local activities, the local VFW hall, and some of the things that they do with the money. The old way that this law was interpreted wouldn't let them really promote any of the local activities that they do, and so this is that flexibility.
Further discussion? Senator Lori renews the motion that when this committee to arise, Senate File 1284 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 69 on general orders, House File 417, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, House File 417 be recommended to pass.
Senator Bach, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill relates to the payment of attorney fees and interest payments when an insurance company does not pay a claim to a commercial policyholder. Members, under current law, there is no provision for a policyholder to recover their attorney fees if the insurance company does not make the payment required under the policy. Basically, what the bill does is really two things. It requires that if the policyholder prevails in court, that the insurance company has to pay 7% interest on the award amount under the policy for the period of time which the claim had not been paid, and when the policyholder prevails, the insurance company has to pay the reasonable attorney fees of the policyholder. Members, is the situation. 46 states allow for this kind of one-way shifting against insurance companies when the policyholder prevails in court, and I'd appreciate your support. I do have, Mr. Chairman, the A50 amendment that puts a limit on the attorney fees.
Secretary will report the Bach A50 amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend House File 417 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 20th as follows, page 2, line 7. This is Amendment A50.
Senator Bach on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I had a discussion with the governor's office about this bill, and they indicated to me that the governor had a problem with the fact that there was no kind of limit on the attorney fee provision. So I really thought going into conference committee it would be wise for us to have a different position than the House does. The House has the attorney fee provision in the same form as this bill came to the floor. I felt that putting a cap of $500,000 on the attorney fee award would make sure that discussion had ample conversation in the conference committee, and we're able to work out an agreement with the governor so that this bill can be signed into law. I'd appreciate your support.
We're on the amendment. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the A1 Scheid amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend House File 417 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 20th as follows, page 1, line 7. This is amendment A-1.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last evening, we approved attorney fees for homeowners who prevail in a home warranty claim. And I supported that because homeowners are in a fight for the largest investment that most of us make in a lifetime, their home. In contrast, this bill awards attorney fees for mostly the really big guys, large national and international firms. There are some smaller companies that say they support this legislation, but I don't think they've considered what will surely happen to their insurance costs when insurance companies have to pay out millions of dollars. And I understand the amendment that you just adopted, limiting it to $500,000, but there will still be millions of dollars at the end of the day if you have a number of companies filing these lawsuits. You'll recall that we spent a lot of time discussing good faith or bad faith legislation last year, and we passed a good law. Businesses qualify to pursue these claims. Senator Bach said that they don't have any recourse today, but they can. They can, now, granted, not for liability insurance, but some they do qualify for property and casualty claims. They qualify for interruption of business. If their company doesn't act in good faith toward them, they may recover up to $100,000 of attorney's fees and a penalty up to or other increased damages for up to $250,000. Most of, if not all of the smaller companies that I heard testify on this bill, and I heard this bill in two different committees, I think virtually all of the smaller companies that testified had property casualty claims, auto and fire claims. Members, we need to let that new law work. It would work for those smaller businesses. We don't need to pass more legislation to pay attorney's fees for big business legal liability lawsuits. You know, the American rule is that parties to a lawsuit pay their own legal fees. That's true for all of us, you and me. For average people, then I think it's good enough for really big business. You should have at your desk, I hope, several letters, including one from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Now, the Chamber considered this bill. You know they have some of our biggest companies, some of the people supporting this legislation are members of the Chamber, but they have a lot of smaller and medium-sized companies. The Chamber considered this bill, and they came down on the side of increasing the prejudgment interest, which Senator Bach described as part of his bill. And obviously they have companies of all sizes, but they came down on the side of, I think, what would be the best for all of their members. And finally, if you'll remember in our debates and discussions of bad faith and good faith legislation, there had to be a showing that the insurer had no reasonable basis for denying the benefits. And what's more, they knew they didn't, or they acted in reckless disregard of that. Remember, you and I need to show those elements to get a benefit under this, to get attorney's fees paid. The big companies don't, there's no showing of bad faith that's needed. They just, for business reason, for some kind of judgment in their mind, in their estimation, I should say, decided that the recovery wasn't warranted or there were still questions remaining to be asked, you don't have to have any showing of bad faith on the part of that insurance company. You just are entitled to the attorney's fees. And as the bill stands now, up to $500,000. I think, members, I'm going to ask you to accept this amendment and I guess send Senator Bach into conference committee without attorney's fees. The other body has unlimited attorney's fees. I think that we need to take a stand here in the Senate for being responsible, frankly, to all of you and I, all of the people who are like you and I, small, average people who may have a quarrel with our insurance company from time to time, and also for smaller and medium-sized business who already can make use of the bad faith legislation. So please support me on the A1 amendment, please.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to rise in support of Senator Bach's bill and in opposition to the amendment proposed by Senator Scheid. This is a bill that's pro-small business, pro-medium-sized business, a bill that allows businesses that take out insurance policies to be made whole when they prevail and they win an argument about whether an insurance should have paid for something, but they could be facing hundreds of thousands of dollars of attorney's fees in order to get the benefit of that insurance policy. And when they have to pay out that kind of money just to simply get the benefit of their insurance policy, the insurance hasn't really done what it was intended to do. It certainly hasn't made them whole. It hasn't given them the benefit of the contract they entered into with the insurance company. Small businesses and medium-sized businesses just don't have the money to pay attorney's fees to fight to get the benefit of that insurance contract. Large businesses probably have that kind of money, or they have attorneys who are on retainer who can enter into that battle for them. Insurance companies have professional attorneys who do nothing but fight on their behalf. But for small businesses to be able to be on an equal footing with insurance companies to get the benefit of that insurance policy, this bill is necessary. Thank you.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a roll call.
There will be a roll call. Any further discussion on the Scheid Amendment? The Secretary will take the roll.
really.
For the conference committee on K-12, they called up. They're coming up. Four senators have asked to be excused. If you're at your seat, should be voting. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 32 ayes, 31 nays. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bach, I'd like to ask a question regarding the interest fees in the bill. This is if an insured prevails in a claim. And I was wondering if you could tell me, you have a number one and a number two in the explanation of interest fees as an award. And my question was the calculation from the date the request for payment of those benefits was made to the insurer. And I was wondering if you could tell me, the way I read it, it's calculated from the date the request for payment was made to the insurer. That brings it way back to the very beginning of when this dispute had occurred or when it was dated. Quite often, these dates are calculated or begin to toll at the time the reward was awarded by the court. So I'm wondering why you have it starting way back at the time of the original finding.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, the point is when the policyholder thinks they are due the money and they're not paid it, then interest would start to accrue until such time as the court determined that the policyholder was correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bach, the way I read this, the court doesn't have any discretion now because we're putting into law that it has to be determined or that interest has to begin at a date as you describe. This is a little unusual. Usually the court has the discretion once they find in favor of the insured, in this case, they're the ones that would award the penalty or the award or the interest accrued. And I'm just wondering why we would want to dictate to the court when how they are going to arrive at the size of the award in this calculation.
Senator Olson, can you some advice on this one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to just perhaps give a little information that might help shed some light on this issue. I mean, in the civil litigation system, we have both pre-judgment and post-judgment interest. That those are kind of two different animals. And so it's not the case that we only have interest awards available when once we have a judgment. Those would be post-judgment interest awards. But the idea here is that once a person who has a contract of insurance makes a valid claim and should be paid, and if they are forced to go to court and prove the necessity or force the insurance company to pay through that process, then not only will they have incurred attorney's fees that they shouldn't have had to be incurring if the insurance company had honored the contract and paid as they should have, and now they're going to have to pay those attorney's fees out of their own pocket after the last amendment, but they're also going to have lost the value of that money they should have had once that legitimate claim was made. The insurance company has a monetary interest in hanging on to that money as long as possible, because they will be able to earn interest on that money that, as it turns out, based on them winning the case, should have been paid to the person who had the contract of insurance. So this is just helping them to give them back the value of that, not having had that money, not being able to earn that interest on it when it wasn't paid when it should have been.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Olson, I understand your explanation. I'm just wondering why we wouldn't give the discretion to the court. There may be an extenuating circumstance that the court will be forced to follow this dictate rather than have its own independent analysis and award given. And I'm also trying to figure out why we're selecting a 7% to begin with as well. What's so magical about 7%?
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, we determine statutory amounts that seem fair all the time. In fact, 7% is less than the 10% post-judgment interest that we passed earlier this session. And so the idea is just to try to do what's fair to make the person whole. And it's also to put a disincentive in law to prolonging litigation and to encourage a fair resolution and settlement of the case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, we all know if we've noticed interest rates and inflationary rates in recent decades where we could have an interest rate of a 3%, we could have mortgage rates of 5%, we could have ongoing T-notes at 3 to 5, now it's nearly zero. 7% in today's world on a rate of return is a rather remarkable rate of return if you would compare it to what you can get in Wall Street or a money market fund. So I'm trying to figure out why we put these numbers in. Now, granted, we may have talked about a 10% sometime in the past, earlier today, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily the right thing to do. I'm trying to figure out, we have judges, they determine awards, they do it all the time. Why would we dictate to them the interest rate per annum? Why would we dictate to them the calculations of how we would suggest the date the award is calculated from? And I'm just wondering why we do that. We have a very strong tradition in the state of Minnesota to allow judges the discretion to decide the cases in their court. That really shouldn't be the branch of government we are from to tell them what to do.
All right, Senator Olson.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of any other situation where the court sets the interest rate. We have different interest rates for different things, but they're always, to my knowledge, found in statute.
Okay, any further discussion on House File 417? Seeing none, Senator Bach renews his motion that when this committee do arise, House File 417 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 110 on general orders, Senate File 805, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 805 be recommended to pass.
Senator Saxhog, discussion on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I'm presenting Senate File 805, which deals with two important forestry issues. The goal of this language is to do two things. First goal, increase the amount of wood that the DNR puts up for sale using the appraisal method where the value is determined up front in place of the scaling method where the value is determined after the wood has been cut. This can be a more efficient way to sell wood and will help realize extra revenue through biomass potential in timber sales. The second part of this bill creates a pilot project that will allow the DNR to lease land for forest management purposes. This will aid in dealing with the issues of fragmentation and consolidation by allowing other parties to help manage state land. I have talked for the last couple of years about the checkerboard pattern of land in northern Minnesota. This language will help the DNR by allowing them to lease certain lands that would be easier managed by other parties due to the location of the parcels. This pilot project does two things. It allows a person or entity to lease 2,000 of the 10,000 available acres in the pilot project so no one group can gain any sort of advantage. And two, it makes sure that anyone who leases the land has to manage it the way the DNR would manage it. Habitat, recreation, and long-term sustainability have to be maintained. With that, I appreciate member support and will stand for questions.
Senator, sir, discussion on the bill. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair.
Would the author yield?
Chair. Senator Chaudhry.
Senator Saxhog, the bill was approved by the Policy Committee and other committees, and I think people want to see this language pass. In the interim, the House companion to this bill has become the House version of their Game and Fish bill. Could you just explain to us what your intent with this Senate file is, given the fact that that has become the vehicle for their omnibus Game and Fish bill?
Senator Saxhog.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. The intent here would be on passage of this to change the authorship to Senator Chaudhry and to send it and to put it on his Game and Fish bill and or for me to put the Game and Fish bill on this bill and to go match it up with a companion forestry bill in the House.
Okay, any further discussion? Senator Saxhog renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 805 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda this evening is number 76 on general orders, House File 534, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that House File number 534, be recommended to pass.
Senator Scogin, discussion on your bill.
This is a bill on certificates of insurance. It takes various regulations and insurance practices relating to certificates of insurance and puts them into a single section in the state's insurance statute. They are merely written documents that provide proof of insurance to a third party. Most certificates are written on a standardized form developed by the insurance industry. Insurance agents are often asked to make changes to those certificates, and this bill would prohibit that practice because these are not binders. These are certificates of proof of insurance.
Okay, discussion on Senator Corrin.
Mr. Chairman, and would Senator Scogin yield for a question?
I'd yield.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, what prompted this bill? Can I ask that? Was it just, I mean, you just didn't...
Insurance industry bill.
It is?
Yes.
Okay, thank
They've
you.
They've had some problems where Senator Coring and Mr. Chair, where a insurance agent at times is asked to give a certificate of insurance that isn't necessarily accurate, and we're trying to clean that up.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Coring,
I just want to thank you.
Good. Any further discussion on House File 534? Seeing none, Senator Scogin renews his motion. When this committee do arise, House File 534 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda this evening, number 19 on general orders, House File 1275, Senator Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move, when this committee do arise, that House File 1275 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Senator, tell the committee what the bill does. Huh?
Okay. Just briefly, Mr. Chair and members, House File is a department bill from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. It updates language, removes obsolete provisions, and provides a more streamlined bonding option for persons regulated under both the MPCA's Septic System Licensing Program and the Department of Labor and Industry's Plumbing Program. It makes a series of mostly technical changes to Chapters 115.55 and 115.56, and a corresponding change in the Department of Labor and Industry's Plumbing Statute. The bill is supported by the Minnesota On-Site Wastewater Association and the Department of Labor and Industry. The Minnesota Association of Realtors contributed to the section relating to septic disclosure at time of property transfer and support that language. There's no fiscal impact to this bill. There's no increased work required of any state agency or local unit of government based on this bill. Again, this is a pollution control agency bill. I will try to answer any questions members may have the best I can.
Any further discussion on House File 1275? Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, I have the A2 amendment.
Secretary will report the Jungbauer A2 amendment.
Senator Jungbauer moves to amend House File 1275 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 6th as follows, page 2, line 16. This is Amendment A-2.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you know, it's kind of frustrating to even see bills like this. This bill shouldn't be here at all. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of taxpayer money. And even as the last rule changes that went into effect are... So, members, I'm going to give you a quick education and have some fun tonight. I have sent out to everybody the definition of sewage because it's going to become pretty important as I go through just a few changes that I'm requesting on this bill. But as I'm going through this also, I've got some other handouts here because this is another time when the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency goes backwards. Members, I talk about this all the time. You'd think the Pollution Control Agency would wake up someday and try to go into the future. But one of my handouts, members, will become important in language because as near back as 2005, we are changing some of these things in our bill from wastewater to sewage. And it's interesting. The Minnesota Association in 2005 was called the Minnesota On-Site Sewage Treatment Contractors Association. So, members, that's important. Sewage Treatment Contractors was the old-fashioned name, the old name, the outdated name. The new name is the Minnesota On-Site Wastewater Association. So two important words here are on-site and wastewater, because the Pollution Control Agency is changing this from, in the definition, they are instead of an individual sewage treatment system, they're changing it to a subsurface sewage treatment system. Interesting, the industry calls it an on-site system, and it's an on-site wastewater system. And the Pollution Control Agency is changing wastewater to sewage, going backwards to the old definitions used in Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, members, I've got another one here, the National Association that deals with this. The National Association across the whole United States is called the National On-Site Wastewater Recycling Association. So they're not only a subsurface treatment system, the national and Minnesota organizations call their treatment systems on-site systems, and they're dealing with wastewater. So I don't think we need to change all the bill, but it just bothers me that once again the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency goes backwards. And in fact, when, as Senator Fobey pointed out here, when they have the industry supporting this bill, the industry that supports this bill is less than 30% members of the people that are licensed to do this work in Minnesota. In fact, I tried to get in on some of these hearings, but because I do not belong to the association, I am not allowed to put input here, even though I hold a license. And in fact, I think I hold higher education level on most of these things than a lot of people in the association. So it's very interesting. But members, what this amendment does specifically is, if you look at line 2.16, the Pollution Control Agency wants a couple words in here: consistent and reliable. Now, the Pollution Control Agency can't even come up with consistent and reliable language, let alone figure out what might be consistent and reliable under a performance-based system. And this piece of language is important if you guys have anything back at home that has lakeshore and has an on-site system on that lakeshore, because a lot of those require a performance-based system because of small lots, because of hard-to-reach areas, bad soils, and they need a performance-based system. And there's a lot of criteria for these performance-based systems, but all of a sudden they want to arbitrarily come up with some measurement of consistent and reliable. So that's very arbitrary. I'm asking to strike that language and go back to the old language. Then members on line 2.19, and as well in a lot of areas in this bill, they're changing wastewater to sewage. That's why I handed you out the definition of sewage so you can see how this applies. But it's interesting, again, when all of the national organizations, all the state organizations went away from sewage and went to wastewater for their definition, and here the Pollution Control Agency is going to the old, outdated term, sewage. All right, members, then if you look at lines 3.34, line 4.1 and 4.2, redoxymorphic features. Members, I'd love to spend all night talking about redoxymorphic features and teaching you about that, because that is one of the most arbitrary definitions in all the wastewater treatment manuals in our code. And in fact, members, the top scientists on redoxymorphic features in the world that are located in Canada say we can't even have redoxymorphic features in Minnesota. We don't have old enough soil. Well, what they're going from here in the bill is they're changing from seasonally saturated to periodically saturated soils. So members, if you have folks in your district that have mound systems today, or if they have an in-ground system, for example, a periodically saturated soil, all you need to do, members, again, if you have wastewater systems in your district, if you water your lawn long enough, you have a periodic saturation in your soil. So members, maybe this is the anti-watering your lawn bill here. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish here. But every time you have a rainfall, you have a higher periodic saturation. And yet, unless those redoxymorphic features show up, which is oxidation reduction, members, rust and graze in the soils, unless those features show up, that doesn't mean anything. So here we are changing it to say, gosh, if you water your lawn, if it rains out, we might have to fail your septic system and cause you to spend a lot more money. Well, this, I guess, members, if you have people that install these systems and you want these systems to create a new jobs bill, hey, it's a great, great jobs bill. But I want to also tell you, members, that on-site sewage treatment systems or on-site wastewater systems, whatever they want to call them, if you go to the rules around 1998, those types of designs, members, treat 98% of all harmful pathogens and contaminants. And what most of you don't know, if you have a wastewater treatment plant in your towns, if you took the average of all the treatment plants in Minnesota, the average of all the treatment plants on the best day, they treat 68% of all harmful contaminants. So members, the Pollution Control Agency just wants to keep going. They just spent 6 years, millions of dollars coming up with rules that went into effect last year. And members, I could have done better, you know, 2 days on the internet, because I work in 36 states. I know the rules. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. We keep reinventing the wheel as though all the soils and all the water and everything in Minnesota is different. We suspend all the laws of chemistry and physics at the Minnesota border, and we decide that we need something different than every other state that knows how to do it, is 20 to 30 years ahead of us on technology, and here we go again, going backwards. How this affects your constituents if they have an on-site wastewater system is it requires a Cadillac when a Yugo protects the environment better than almost any wastewater treatment plant in the state of Minnesota. And how that affects real people, especially this periodic saturation, members, in a time of downturn in the economy. If you water your lawn too much and you go to sell your house and have a compliance inspection, you're going to have a failed system. You're going to have a Cadillac system to install. You're going to spend a lot of money that you don't need to install to protect the environment. Members that know me know I'm all about protecting the environment. I am not about stupid rules. I'm not about stupid rule changes. I'm not about wasting taxpayer money. Members, I hope you support my amendment. It only changes a couple lines back to the old way and lets the PCA have 99% of their goofy changes in here. I'm just asking you to support me on a couple lines. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Phoebe.
Mr. Chair and members, thanks, Senator Jungbauer, for that education on septic systems. I did check with the Pollution Control Agency because Senator Jungbauer did talk to me about this amendment prior to today, and their comment was that they believed the changes in the amendment are not substantive, and they will have little or no effect on the bill, and would just push this bill into the conference committee, so I'd encourage you not to support this amendment. Thank you.
Okay, we're on that Jungbauer A
Mr. Chair.
Amendment. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Senator Phoebe, I guess if that's what they said, these changes aren't substantive, then we ought to can the whole bill. We ought to can the whole bill. This ought to go to a conference committee, and members, don't you find it just a little strange that as the only licensed PCA designer, inspector, installer in the legislature, don't you think that the PCA, if they had something real, might want to come and talk to me about it, since I know what they're talking about, instead of bringing a bill through the back door to people that have no clue what any of this language means? I think, members, that ought to speak for itself, that the PCA wouldn't even talk to me about the bill, because they know that I would never push forward something this ridiculous.
Further discussion on the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. Any further discussion on Senate File 1275? Seeing none, Senator Phoebe renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1275 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda this evening is set number 18 on general orders, which is Senate File 763, Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 763 be recommended to pass.
Hey, Senator Moi, tell the committee what the bill is all about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I have two bills on restoration of voting rights. One bill restores the right to vote upon incarceration. This is not that bill. So before people get excited, this is not that bill, Senator Limmer. This bill is the notice bill. And what this bill does is it doesn't change current law. Under current law, your right to vote gets restored to you after you have completed your sentence or once you have been off papers. This bill does not change current law. What this bill asks is that we provide a better notification process when people are off paper or when they're about to go on probation. We notify them that upon the completion of their sentence, and once they're off papers, then their right to vote will be restored. So the bill provides a notice that ought to be provided to the individual, and the bill also provides two opportunities where this notice ought to be given to these ex-offenders. Once upon release from incarceration, and once by their probation officers. We ask that this notice be given as part of the usual process that included in the paperwork that is done. So we're not asking for an extra process. We're not asking for extra effort. Mr. Chair, members, that's what Senate File 763 does. And in fact, there is an A4 amendment. There's an A4 amendment, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to offer, the A4 amendment.
Secretary will report the A4 amendment.
Senator Moi moves to amend Senate File 763 as follows, page 1, line 16. This is Amendment A-4.
And members, if you will take a look at the A4 amendment, the A4 amendment actually is input from the Department of Corrections to make the language even more permissive so that the department doesn't have to accompany the notice with a voter registration card, but that if they do have a supply of it, that they may do that, but we're not making it a shall, that they shall give a voter registration card. So that's the A4 amendment, members.
On the amendment, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Senator Moi moves the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File 763 as amended? Senator Moi renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 763 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on agenda this evening, number 97 on general orders, Senate File 1369, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1565 be recommended to pass.
1369, Senator Murphy, discussion on your bill.
Mr. President, members, this is a pretty simple, non-controversial bill. It's going to allow two nursing facilities in Red Wing to combine to one. There will be the decertification of 65 beds. The bill was worked in Senator Cohen's committee so that the fiscal impact of the state was zero. What this does allow is it allows two of the nursing home institutions in Red Wing, as I said, to combine into a new center, which is aimed at healthy living for seniors. This is a program that fits within the guidelines of what the Department of Health has been asking nursing home providers to do. There was no dissension in any committees, and this is a great thing for the city of Red Wing, and I would hope that everyone would support this. And I renew my motion, Mr. President.
Further discussion on Senate File 1369. Senator Murphy renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1369 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator, the next bill on the agenda this evening is number 26 on general orders, Senate File 79, Senator Thomas Soni.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 79 be recommended to pass.
A discussion on the bill, Senator Thomas Soni.
Mr. Chairman, this is just a simple, it's a local bill. It's a reauthorization of the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District. And, Mr. Chairman, the cities and the various that were written into the district earlier have made an agreement on how to handle it now. And I have an A1 amendment that reflects what the three cities, what kind of agreement the three cities came to.
Secretary will report the Thomas Soni A1 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate File 79 as follows. Page 1, after line 4, insert Section 1. This is Amendment A-1.
Senator Tomasoni on the amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, what this does is it just makes the city of Hibbing the fiscal agent for the money that will be used for the treatment facilities at the plant, and it leaves the use of the money basically the same, and it takes Hibbing out of the district.
Okay, on the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 79 as amended. Seeing none, Senator Tomasoni renews his motion. When that this committee do arise, Senate File 79 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the Committee of the Whole as kept by the Secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator
Mr. Tomasoni. President.
Pogemiller.
Members, tax members provisions, I forget what Senator Bach is calling that bill, the members' provisions bill is this bill now. House file. So, Mr. President, I move that House File 1298 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 1298, and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 1298 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I yield to Senator Bach.
Second reading.
House File 1298.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-50 amendment.
Secretary will report the Bach A-50 amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend House File 1298 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Article 1. This is Amendment A-50.
Senator Bach, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the bill in front of you that came over from the House is the public finance bill. It's being used as the vehicle to get to the governor much of the work of the tax conference committee going on down in room 15. This is a very large amendment, about 198 pages. It is every provision in here has been adopted by the members of the conference committee. Kind of in summary, the federal conformity, often referred to as a federal update language, is in here. There are the department articles are in here. The public finance provisions agreed to by the House and the Senate are in here. There are a number of members' provisions related to tax increment financing, to personal property tax exemptions for a couple of gas power plants. There is a new special taxing district for emergency services for Cloquet and one of the surrounding townships. There is a provision for the Red River Valley for homes that are rebuilt because of the flood, allowing the local government to exempt from property taxes homes the first 2 years of property taxes on new homes that are constructed. The legislation that came to us as a result of the Rainbow decision relative to institutions of pure public charity is included in here. Uh, what is there really there is no new revenue in the bill. The bill is revenue neutral in FY 10 and 11. Because of the way federal conformity works, we raised a little bit of money, I believe about $10 million that we shifted over to FY 12 and 13 to help with the deficit there. Members, the governor is supportive of the language in this bill, and I felt it was important to get these the provisions that the department needs to make sure they can continue to adequately ensure that tax policy flows accurately be incorporated, that the members' provisions be incorporated. You never know for sure the fate of a large tax bill at the end of the session. So, members, I'd appreciate your support. This is our best effort to try and get the bills that you introduced this session. They were important back in the communities you represent on the governor's desk. So I appreciate your support for the amendment.
Mr. President.
On the amendment, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And pursuant to Rule 4.4, I move that this bill be referred to the Finance Committee.
Rule are you referring
to? Mr. President, I'm referring to Rule 4.4 that says all bills appropriating money or obligating the state to pay or expend money or establishing a policy which will be effective will require expenditure money when referred to and reported by any other than the Committee on Finance must be referred before passage to the Committee on Finance. And it's my understanding there are at least a couple of provisions in this bill that appropriates money from the general fund to the DNR to cover costs associated with permits and another $25,000 to cover costs associated for crop damage. And I'd like a roll call vote on that.
Okay, that is a higher motion.
Okay, that motion is in order. It's a higher motion, so the motion is to re-refer to the bill to finance. Is that correct?
Mr. President, yes. I think the rule is pretty clear that if you've got a bill that is appropriating and spending money, it has to go to finance before it can come to the floor. And since this bill does that, it should go to finance before we take it up.
Okay, that's just for a roll call. Secretary will take the roll on that motion to refer the bill to the Finance Committee. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 18 ayes, 42 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
I rise for a point of order.
Senator Hand.
Mr. President, my point of order is I think that we are out of order taking this bill up, and I'd like your interpretation of Rule 4.4 and its applicability to this bill and whether we are in order taking it up since it has appropriations in it and has not gone to finance.
It's my opinion that the body just made the determination on that Rule 4.4. We had the whole whole Senate.
Mr. President.
Said that we can proceed, so that's what we're operating under. Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Mr. President, I'm asking for the rule your judgment or your ruling on the rule that seems to me is pretty clear, and why would we not follow the rule? I know we had a vote to send it back to committee and we failed on that motion, but aren't we operating in violation of our rules, and shouldn't you as the president make a ruling on that and tell us we're out of order?
Under the body just determined I think that supersedes what you're after. We already took a vote that the entire Senate voted on this, that it's not to go to the Finance Committee. So
Mr. President, I just want to make it apparently clear here that we're not going to operate by the rules, but we're going to operate on what the majority wants to do. And I think that's clear, and I just want to make that point.
We're on the A50 amendment. Any further discussion? Senator Bach renews his motion that the A50 amendment. Senator Corey.
Mr. President, I do have an amendment that I think is...
I think, why don't we adopt this one and then you can enter yours if that's all right with you. On the Bach A50 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now, Senator Corey, if you have an amendment to the Bach bill...
I did ask them to prepare it, and I think it's ready, but it just isn't here yet, Mr. President.
Do you believe it's on the way? Okay,
yes.
They're coming. I think you can...
Here it is right here. Mr. President...
Secretary will report the coring. A52 amendment.
Senator Coring moves to amend the Bach Amendment to House File 1298 adopted by the Senate May 12th as follows. Page 61 after line 12, insert. This is amendment A52.
Senator Corrin on the A52.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I do feel a little bit lonely. There isn't very many members in here, but I guess we can proceed forward anyway. Members, I'm hoping that you can accept this amendment. You know, we talked about this before. If you noticed in the bill that's before us right now, Senator Mimua's portion in there for $25,000 for the hail damage is in there. So my amendment is pretty simple, and I'll just read it. It's a pumpkin growers grant. $5,000 is appropriated from the general fund to the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources to be used to provide grants for pumpkin farmers actively engaged in farming in the area of the state south of Highway 371 and north of Crow Wing County Highway 2 for those crops that were destroyed in 2008. And so I'm hoping members will support this. There was damage up there too, and these farmers deserve to be able to apply for a grant too. So I would stand for any questions, and I'm hoping that Senator Bach will support this.
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Jr. I don't know. Senator Buck.
Mr. President, I move that proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the back motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now we're on the Corrigan amendment. Senator Buck.
Mr. President, the members of the conference committee all agreed, House and Senate, that there would not be any amendments to this bill, that the only thing included in this bill would be provisions that were adopted by the members of the conference committee. And Senator Coring, I'm sensitive to the issue here, and I'd be happy to take it up down in the conference committee later this week. There's ample time to address that. If you can bring us a little information about the crop damage that took place. But members, we jeopardize getting this bill to the governor in a timely way if we amend it, because the House has assured me that they would take this bill to conference committee if we made any amendments that hadn't been adopted down in room 15. So I'd appreciate a no vote.
Senator Corey.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Mr. President, could I ask for a roll call vote on this, because this is an important amendment for the folks in my district, because the kids might not be able to have pumpkins next fall if this amendment is not passed. So I'm asking for a roll call vote on this amendment. Thank you.
There will be a roll call. Senator Buck.
Well, Mr. President, if this is important to Senator Coring, I would suggest that he not have a roll call vote, because Senator Coring, once something is defeated on the Senate floor, it's against our rules to bring it back from the conference committee. So if you really need this money for this project, I'd like to be able to help you with that down in the conference committee. But if the entire Senate votes against your provision, I can just tell you it won't be coming back in the conference committee report. So,
Senator Corrigan,
I think the best thing to do would be to withdraw the amendment.
You wish to withdraw?
I would just yield to the goodness of the body and ask for your support on this amendment. I don't ask for much, but I'd ask for your support on this amendment.
Senator Robley on the pumpkin amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm feeling really manipulated here. You know, a group of five people worked this out, and it comes to the Senate floor on general orders, and we're told we cannot make any amendments to it, or it's all out the door. Now, I don't think that's the way we should be doing business around here. I think, how did this provision get in? It was supposed to be in the Ag and Vets bill. That's how it left here. And now, all of a sudden, it shows up. Not Senator Corning's amendment, but the provision he's trying to amend. And, you know, I just don't understand how this system works. And I would appreciate it if someone could explain to me why this whole body can't vote and offer amendments and maybe have them considered, because that is the way the people of Minnesota expect it to happen. And so to tell us that any amendments are unacceptable, that if we have offer an amendment and it's defeated here, that it'll never come back. I know that's not true. I know that things have been defeated here and come back all the time. Because the House has it in their language, and then it comes back to us. I know that happens. So, you know, sometimes we've been told it's the general practice, but it's not the rule of law. And so I am really frustrated that bills are being put together this way without the input from the whole body.
We're on the Corrigan Amendment. Secretary will take the roll. Senate is under call.
Thank you.
All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Be it 22 ayes, 38 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1298. Senator Roebling.
I have the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the Roebling A1 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend the Bach Amendment to House File 1298 adopted by the Senate May 12th as follows. Page 59, delete lines 19 to 28. This is Amendment A-1.
Senator Roebling on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deletes the portion that Senator Corrin was attempting to amend. And members, if we can't do it for one member, we shouldn't do it for any. And I don't understand why some would get preferential treatment here for their constituents if others don't. Quite frankly, I did support Senator Corrin's amendment on principle, but it's not a good idea. We should not be singling out certain groups for special treatment. We should not be serving as the insurance company for the state. And I believe that this provision, which we did have a debate over when it was before us in the Ag and Vets Committee, should not be in this bill. It went out of here in Ag and Vets. I'm not sure what happened to it there. But if it can't belong in the Ag bill, it certainly shouldn't be in here. We should not be covering the hail damage for one small group when we can't take care of it for another. And so, members, I ask for your support on this amendment.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair and members, what we do here at the Minnesota Legislature is to help all the people in our communities when the need is there. I was there for the Bridge Compensation Fund, where we found the resources to respond to the survivors of the bridge collapse. In this bill are aids and credits way more than the mere $25,000 that are on this bill for a group of small farmers market growers who don't necessarily all live in St. Paul, but who are associated with the St. Paul Growers Association. You know, when the ag bill left the Senate floor, there was $25,000 in there, despite objection from the members of this Senate, in that bill for the Growers Association. And when they were in conference committee, you know what they did? They cut the appropriation in half to give $10,000 to another group and $15,000 to the St. Paul Growers Association. What do you do with $15,000 for a group of people who have suffered a catastrophe? It's a rounding error in many of the budgets that we pass up here at the legislature. And when I went to press my case with members of the conference committee, do you know what I was asked? Well, Senator, if we do this for you and your special group, the German farmers are going to come and ask for a special appropriation. The Norwegian farmers are going to come and ask for a special appropriation. Why is it that when I carry a bill for a group of people who are growers in Minnesota, that somehow it's a special appropriation for a special group of people? I didn't know what was more offensive to me. That somehow there was some thinking that this $25,000 was going to not be available to Swedish growers and Norwegian growers. or the fact that because I am who I am and I'm carrying this bill for this appropriation, that somehow it's being earmarked for a special group of people that this chamber cannot relate to. This bill and every bill that has come before this legislature has appropriated far more in the millions for groups in our various communities who have suffered catastrophes. And we do it gladly because we feel that it is part of our obligation to respond. I don't know what insults and offends me more. That somehow I have tainted the sufferings of these growers because of who I am, and I have chosen to bring their case forward to this body. To equate the suffering that these people went through, if you have seen their faces when you went to their farms, oh, but you wouldn't go. You wouldn't bother to go. If you had seen their faces, the look in their eyes to see the tomatoes damaged, the flowers damaged, the peppers with not even a leaf on the stalk, and the look in their eyes as if they have suffered, lost their whole life, you too would feel the same pain that I did. And to equate them with pumpkin growers? Remember, it's $25,000. It's not even $250,000. It's not even $2 million. And we're having this kind of debate? What kind of Minnesota are we? I apologize to the growers that somehow who I am has tainted their worth in the eyes of this body.
We're on the Roebling A1 Amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah Moi, I can understand your passion for this. I can certainly understand the loss of the crops that were damaged, but I think Senator Roebling makes a pretty good point. And the point is if we can go to the point of indemnifying certain farmers in St. Cloud or St. Paul, why can't we do it for Senator Coring's farmers? Now, you made a pretty good speech, but I also noticed that you voted against Senator Coring's bill. So when you talk of the smashed crops and the leaves falling off, why aren't we considering the loss of the farmers up in Senator Coring's district? You voted against that. And I would imagine many of the people that voted against Senator Coring's amendment are going to vote to sustain the crop damage in St. Paul. That's what I don't understand in this body. We can have powerful speeches about loss of some. At the very moment that we just got done voting against another group.
Senator Jungbauer, and then Senator Roebling. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise in support of the Roebling Amendment. And Senator Moi, we can all advocate and say great passionate things about the people we serve, but our disagreement is a basic disagreement. In my opinion, this is pure, unadulterated pork. This is an earmark. It doesn't matter what group of folks we're growing. It doesn't matter to me. In my opinion, this is not the job of government. And that is the big difference between some members of this chamber and others, and that is the reason we have a budget problem in Minnesota today. We need to define what is the message, what is the job of government, and what isn't. And until that happens, we will always be back here with continuous budget problems, no matter how small the amount is. Yes, this is a small amount. Yes, people find this amount in government laying under rocks, in cracks, in dark places. That doesn't matter. It is not the job of government.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ma, there was no mention on this floor that anyone here was targeting this appropriation or trying to remove it because of who you are or who you represent. And you know, I hope we didn't give you that impression, and I'm sorry if we did, but there was no mention of that on this floor. It is like Senator Youngbauer said, the state shouldn't be doing this for all the people, or if they do it, then they have to do it for all the people. And we're trying to make a point here that hail damage occurred in other places in the state just as well. People were just as devastated. I have been a person who has walked out and seen our farm and our gardens and vegetables severely damaged by hail, and I'm sure the expression on my face was pretty overwhelming if someone had seen it, because it is a terrible thing to happen. But we can't expect the state to help out everyone who has a crisis like that. I'm trying to say the state cannot be the insurer for everyone who has a crisis. That is the point we are trying to make.
Senator Scoy, then Senjum, and I believe we know pretty much what the amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. The state does take care of people that suffer with disasters. Last year, we sent $3.7 million to Southeast Minnesota to help them with the floods. It was an appropriation to the Commissioner of Ag to give to the farmers of that region at his discretion. Now, this is a small amount. Senator Ma introduced a bill. I know it was heard in the Ag Committee. It went through the process, and she's got some aid for her city. It's clearly a tax issue. It's an LGA appropriation. Now, I don't know what Senator Coring's growers went through, but if it was hail damaged, it happened last summer. Did he introduce a bill? I attended every Ag Committee hearing. I never heard it. Brings an amendment to the floor on a bill that has been negotiated over weeks. I would ask you to support Senator Ma and not support the Roebling Amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members. Most of us, I think, in this room tonight represent agriculture in some way within our districts, and we all know farmers, and we all know the, if you will, the plight of the farmer. And the plight of the farmer is that of a person who works often at great risks, never knowing in the spring when he or she plants those crops, what's going to be there in the fall. Whether it's hail, whether it's drought, whether it's insects, whether it's any other kind of peril, disease, you name it. The farmer is one who works at risk. And has been said several times on the floor tonight, they work at risk, they recognize that, and they go forward. And frankly, they don't come to the altar of government looking for helps when things go wrong. So, Mr. President, members, I think this is one of those, if you will, precedents that is a little bit dangerous. We ought not probably go down this road, and once we do, I think we open up ourselves to a lot of future crop damage kind of paybacks, if you will, and it's going to be hard, I think, to separate those out. So, Mr. President, members, think long and hard on this. We all want to support our agriculture, there's no question about it, but I'm not sure this is the way to do it.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, we've been down this road many times. We've had special sessions. Perhaps Senator Moi should have asked for $25 million. I cannot believe my ears. I cannot believe it. She is representing Minnesotans who have a need, who suffered a calamity, and it affected their livelihood. And we have been here time and time again. We help people rebuild in floodplains, for crying out loud. I think maybe we're getting a little beyond that, but we've done that. We've helped many farmers around this state, and I intend to vote to keep this in the bill.
Okay, we're on that Roebling Amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 1298. Secretary will give the bill its third, before the third reading, Senator Vandiver.
I have the A53 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vandiver A53 amendment.
Senator Vandiver moves to amend the Bach Amendment to House File 1298 adopted by the Senate May 12th as follows, page 32 after line 24, insert. This is Amendment A53.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, what this amendment does is all across the state of Minnesota, property owners who have horses on their land are being determined to be commercial use. In error, I believe, by the assessor, but what this does is clarify that property that is correctly classified as agricultural property under this subdivision for taxes payable in 09 will not be disqualified from the agricultural classification as a result of the presence on the land of horses used for equestrian purposes. So it just clarifies that the horse, if you have agricultural property, the fact that you have horses doesn't mean it's now commercial property. I'd appreciate your support.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President. And members, I would ask you to reject this amendment. In the bill is a study that we're asking the Department of Revenue to do in consultation with the Department of Ag to study the issue that's before us of classification with regard to horses and horse raising and horse boarding and all of the complications that are going along with that area. There's another provision in the bill that if a landowner feels that they've been misclassified, that they will have the opportunity to write to the Commissioner of Revenue, and he has the authority to delay the reclassification if there's any cause. He's required to give his reasons in writing and issue this opinion to the landowner. Seems like a real good compromise that we've worked out. If we get this study from the Department of Revenue, we'll be able to address this issue next year with good information and make fully informed decisions. I ask you to reject the Vandiver Amendment.
Senator Vandiver.
Mr. President, I would just say that in my district, I don't know about anyone else's, there are many, many people just being pulled off agricultural classification and being reclassified as commercial simply because they have horses.
Okay, we're on the Vandiver motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield, please?
The author will yield, Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Senator Bach, on Article 12, Section 4, is the...
What page is...
That's 180.20, okay. The statement of premiums paid. And it deals with the Section 125 health care coverage. And I just, I guess my question to you, Senator Bach, is... what facilitated this change, and how is it going to change the plan, the Section 125 plan? And if you can give me a little feedback on what precipitated this change.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Rosen, this change was brought to us by the Minnesota Business Partnership, and they felt that this language needed to be included and they characterize it as a technical change to make the program work better for the employers.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Brock, I have another question for you, if you wouldn't mind yielding.
He's fine.
Thank you. Senator Bach, I was wondering if in this bill or your amendment here, if you at all considered the governor's green jobs initiative. I know you have one provision in there that deals with the Job Z in Faribault County, which is excellent, extending the Job Z provisions, but I think it's really important that we consider the governor's work and initiative dealing with the green jobs, and I was wondering why this was never even considered in this bill.
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, Senator Rosen, the agreement that we have with the Commissioner of Revenue is that we would not put any money raisers in this bill, so we weren't able to do spending in this bill that on something like Green Job Z that would have scored on the spreadsheet as costing money. So the next bill that comes, assuming there's going to be another tax bill, will have some revenue raisers in it and some spending in it, but the governor and the commissioner insisted that the bottom line in FY 10 and 11 needed to be zero, that we couldn't be negative. So we had no opportunity to spend the money on the Job Z program. And I am pleased, members, to tell you that Senator Day's provision relative to Faribault and a pretty exciting business they're trying to attract there is included in the bill.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Bach, very grateful for that provision to Faribault County. I think that's an excellent company. They come and testified several times, especially on the Green Jobs Z. And I know there's a lot more projects and initiatives out there and businesses that would love to have their Job Z program extended or worked on. But I hope you seriously consider the Green Job Z provision. And I know that there can't be that type of provision in this bill, as you explain. It just doesn't. I look at that $680,000 from the general fund to the DNR to cover the costs associated with the issuing of mining permits. So I'm a little perplexed there why that appropriation's in here. This bill did not go to finance, and we don't have true economic development in this bill.
Senator Day, did you have a...
Mr. President, I think everybody here remembers a few days ago when I was talking about the jobs in Faribault, Minnesota, and I want to thank Senator Bach, Senator Mao, Skoy, Dibble, and Senator Johnson from our caucus to put that in the bill. That hopefully we can secure 160 jobs, and I just wanted to thank Senator Bach and the conferees for doing that. And I think we're heading into some, tough times. And I know today, and it was very interesting. It was interesting to me, and it was interesting about Medtronic taking 1,400 jobs, as San Antonio, Texas announced this morning, KSAT, a station out of San Antonio, that are headed down. So I want to thank the conferees because hopefully we can at least get back 100-160 of these jobs at Sage down in Faribault, Minnesota. But I think there's a good indication if you read today's paper, or maybe it'll be in tomorrow's paper, about one of our major companies and 1,400 jobs going to San Antonio. And that is devastating. And I know Senator Rosen talked about Hormel and some other companies here just recently. So we all better tune in to what we're doing on business taxes in the state of Minnesota. Thanks.
Secretary will give Senate File 1298. That's third. Senator Koch.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. I have the A54 amendment. Vandeveer's name.
Secretary will report the Koch A54 amendment.
Senator Koch moves to amend the Bach Amendment to House File 1298, adopted by the Senate May 12th, as follows. Page 63, after line 16, insert. This is Amendment A54.
Senator Koch on A54 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, last year in the last week or so of session, we passed a tax bill that had some Green Acres provisions in it that caused a lot of difficulty for a lot of our constituents. I'm trying to head off another potential situation I see coming down the road with this amendment. Senator Vanderveer spoke about ag equestrian owners having their land, their property taxes, and their land reclassified from agricultural to commercial or increasing their taxes. And we know that this is an issue. And in fact, in the bill, we have a study. We have a task force formed to look at the issue. This bill simply delays any changes in classifications until we make some official decisions based on that task force or that committee. For until we make official decisions, no property will be reclassified with this amendment. And members, I'd like your support. I think we should just put things on hold for the time being and then make some decisions next session.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, members, and I would ask you to reject this amendment. This predisposes that the assessors are doing it wrong. Let's do the study and get the information and make an informed decision next year. I ask you to vote no.
Discussion on the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Bach, even though I wish there was some economic development in here, I wish we could concentrate on a few more things, I do actually want to give you a compliment, and that's on your 18-month moratorium on the maintenance of efforts. I think that's probably one of the best pieces of the whole bill.
Secretary will give Senate File 1298 its third reading.
Senate House File 1298, a bill for an act relating to public finance, providing terms and conditions relating to issuance of obligations and financing of public improvements, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Senate is under call. Where are these other people? What do we get, 50, 66 already? All senators having voted, Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 54 ayes, 12 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Without objection, pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Stump moves that the following members be excused for a conference committee on House File Number 2 from 6:40 to 8:10. Stump, G. Olson, Saltzman, Weger, and Dahl. Without objection, pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Lynch moves that the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate File 2083 from 6:40 to 7:45. Senator Pappas, Senator Roebling, Senator Lynch, Senator Latz, and Senator Erickson Ropes. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. What do we got left?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Members, we are trying to ascertain whether we need to stay any longer this evening, and that could be, it'll take us 5 or 10 minutes to figure that out. So what I'd like to do is go on general orders, pick a couple things here that don't seem too heavy lifting, and see if we can't do those. So if I could just, Mr. President, just a brief recess so I could consult with the other side of the aisle to see if there's a couple bills here we could process.
Senator Fischbach, did you have
Mr. President, would Senator Pogemiller yield?
Senator,
we're going on. Mr. President, it turns out we do not need to stay in, so I think we will not go back on general orders. We will wrap it up for the evening.
Okay.
People could use a decent night's sleep, I think.
Okay. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, would Senator Pogemiller yield?
Senator Pogemiller will yield.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, do you think we could get some idea of what the plan is for tomorrow and potentially even the rest of the week? I know that there are still some conference committees out, but I think everyone would appreciate knowing what the plan is tomorrow and into the next few days.
Senator Pogemiller.
Yes, Mr. President, Senator Fischbach and members, we have five outstanding conference committees. I believe we will process those bills tomorrow. State departments, higher ed, education, ag and vets, and the bonding bill. I believe all those will be posted this evening before midnight. And so we would be able to take those bills all up tomorrow. Some are House files, some are Senate files, so that would be the order. Let's, Michelle, which ones are Senate files? Members, two of those bills are Senate files, state departments and higher ed. So I presume we would take those up first fairly rapidly tomorrow. And then we would have to wait for education, bonding, and ag and vets. So the two Senate files, state departments and higher ed, we would process first thing tomorrow, probably. Obviously, we could wait for a caucus. Senator Senjum could think about that for a second. And then we will do other general orders.
We have excuses.
Mr. President? Mr. President?
Yes, who is that? Yes, Senator likes that.
The bonding conference committee will meet at 10 o'clock and 3:18.
Okay, without objection, Senator Paris will be excused from today's session all day. Senator Koch from noon to 1:30, Senator Dibble from noon to 12:25, Kielash from 12 to 12:30, Stump from 12 to 1:15, Phoebe from 12:30 to 12:35, Gerlach from 12 to 1:30, Senator S from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, Berglund from 6:40 to 8:35, Senator Ortman from 6:50 to 7:25, Senator Murphy from 8:10 to 8:40, Senator Bonoff from 6:40 to 8:10. Senator Latz.
Mr. President, members, just a quick reminder that the Joint House-Senate Subcommittee on Claims will be hosting a hearing tomorrow morning to hear from the Special Masters Panel that administered the 35W Bridge Collapse Fund. We will hear from all three of the attorneys that served as Special Masters as to how the distribution process went. And all of you are welcome to join us at 9 o'clock in the State Office Building, Room 300 South. Thank you.
Further announcement, Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Conference Committee will meet 15 minutes after the House adjourns.
Mr. President.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Legislative Audit Commission is meeting in the morning at 9 a.m. in room... where? In room 112.
Senator Prettner-Soled.
Mr. President, the Energy Omnibus Bill Conference Committee will meet in 125 immediately.
Senator Sharon.
Just a reminder that tomorrow at 8:30, those of you who are interested in the newly forming Cancer Caucus, we will be meeting at 8:30 at 318 in the Capitol for the newly forming Cancer Caucus. Please join us.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Conference Committee on House File 2323, that's the Omnibus Tax Bill, will meet tomorrow, 1/2 hour after the last body adjourns.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. President, thank you. Just three words, black and white.
A further announcement, Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, the Conference Committee on Transportation Policy will meet tomorrow morning at 9:30 in room 318.
Further announcements. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, we will come in at 10 a.m., break for caucus, be back on the floor by 11, and we would then process state departments and higher ed. And then we would then break for lunch and caucus again so that we could the caucuses could talk about those other bills that we have to wait for from the House. Bonding, ag and vets, and education. So hopefully, and then we'll do general orders in between all that. I just provided Senator Senjum a list of general orders, about 8 or 10 of them that we were considering doing tonight. I presume that'll be the base of the list tomorrow. I would move we adjourn till Senate adjourn till Wednesday, May 13th, 10 a.m.
The motion is to adjourn to Wednesday, May 13th at 10 a.m. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.